going along, Senator Hayden, if you see a question that you'd like to respond to, and if you want to ask for a response from the person, go ahead and do that. Sunshine is kind of our technical, she's our gatekeeper, and so she'll jump in if she needs to. Are there any questions right away as to how we're going here this evening?
No, I think we can start and just let the senator say a few words maybe on legislation and anything else that he's interested in. And then.
Yeah. Well, sure. Well, first of all, thank you guys.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody. Here's Senator Hayden.
Okay. Well, thank you guys on this pretty nice summer evening. First of all, I just want to say thank you for all of your work and being active in your neighborhood. You know, as many of you know, I'm getting a little old. You can see the gray now, but well over 25 years ago, I joined the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association. And that journey led me to be the chair of the Neighborhood Association and work with the old NRP program and all that kind of stuff for those of you who were around during that time. And that's where I met former Councilmember Schiff and worked as a Ninth Ward City Council aide, which many of you still live in the Ninth Ward. The lines have shifted over the years. So the work that you guys are doing and the advocacy that you're doing is really clear and near to my heart. It's where I really got my start in thinking about this work. So once again, I just would be remiss in not saying thank you for your hard work, your volunteerism. And I know that, you know, people really are doing this because they love their community. With that being said, I also want to say that this is, without being said, you guys live here and so do I. This has been a tough year. It's been tough on all fronts. Started out with COVID and COVID-19 and the coronavirus and that ideal of what should we do, and the state starting to shut down, and we have a lot of vulnerable people who live in our district. Someone said they can't hear. Are you guys hearing me? Raise your hand if you can hear me. Okay, good. And let me just back up to just say this for those who don't know me. I have been in this legislature for 12 years. I spent 3 years in the House representing the B side, the last 9 years representing both sides of the district. My committees are Health and Human Service, which includes healthcare, Medicaid, and as well as human service, finance, that's the appropriation committee, as well as the commerce committee. And then I also have served in some level of leadership for the past 9 years as a deputy majority or assistant minority leader. So just to get that out the way, I have focused a lot on healthcare. And so when COVID happened, I was knee deep in working with the Department of Human Service, the Minnesota Department of Health, the CDC, and the governor on putting together the guidelines and crafting the legislation to get us to where we could, Minnesota could be protected. So we're proud of that work. We're not out of the woods yet, though our state, and I will give the governor a lot of credit for that, as well as many of us, we really have pushed the dollars, the COVID fund, and then the CARES Act to really try to do as best we can to deal with not only hospitals and healthcare facilities and others and federally qualified healthcare clinics and clinics, PPE, to be as healthy and safe as we can. But then all the ancillary issues like the governor's housing fund, the $100 million plus more money that we've put in for folks that were disproportionately affected by, that have been affected by COVID, and those essential frontline workers, but then also those that were laid off because or lost hours because of COVID. We've put a lot of money there. I will say this, between COVID, and then we walked right into the murder of George Floyd, and we all dealt and worked with that. I probably talked to many of you about this issue and then the ensuing civil unrest that happened, and then those that came to our community looking for trouble and started to set our community on fire. And so I've been through a lot of sessions, but never one like this, and never have seen so much trauma in one part of town, with all due respect to my good friend Senator Champion and others in St. Paul. But as you know, Senate District 62, and frankly, the neighborhood that you guys live in, really took the brunt of these issues. So we have been working in overtime to try to deal with those issues, figure out the recovery, work with a Republican majority that does seem to care more about, you know, who did what, which we care about too, than they care about what actually happened to George Floyd and then the rebuilding of our community. So we are working awfully, awfully hard at working at this issue. Some of the things that I'll go over, and I'll be willing to take any question you have. Let's just start with COVID. We are still in a peacetime emergency. That is why you keep seeing us go back to special session every 30 days to affirm the governor's peacetime emergency. Not only is that really important to make sure that we have the funds and the nimbleness and the governor can make those decisions, it also gives us a lot of protections, mortgage and foreclosure protection. It allows the governor to move the CARES Act money as well as the coronavirus money that's come from state money to where it's needed. It allows us to really try to protect Minnesotans, even in terms of what you saw this week in terms of, you know, finally saying statewide, not just city by city, we need to wear a mask. I'll back up a little bit, and I think you guys understand why we need to wear a mask. But I had Dr. Klein, who's a colleague of mine from Mendota Heights, he's a senator, he said it really perfectly. He just said, when we talk, there's goblets that come from us. If we have a mask, they stay with us. And when the other person talks, it stays with them. And we know we need to wash our hands or social distance if we don't have a mask. But masks actually help as we're figuring out how to deal with COVID-19 and to have a vaccine. In the meantime, the ability for us to have a mask when we're in close contact really does help. And in the states that didn't do that, the states that rushed back to open up, you guys see it every single day, Texas and Florida, even California, which was doing the best that they can. But when they opened up too fast with high density populations, people got sick really quickly, and those states are having to close up again. So we are working all steam ahead on this issue of COVID-19 and then supporting everyone who is affected by it. That issue rolls into the housing issue that I know we want to talk about a lot. It really showed that when we had the civil unrest and people were moving, we knew the people that were living in our communities that were unsheltered, they ended up kind of moving out and they went to the Sheridan, and we saw that that was a bit of a disaster, and then over to Powderhorn Park, and then some of the decisions that local government made. And we have a very strong local government system. We have an elected park board, school board, and city council. They made some decisions about sanctuary and where people should go. And I'll step back, and I'm not trying to deflect any of my responsibility, but the state, for the most part, has high level laws and policy. And what we do most of all is give local government a lot of support and relief in the terms of money and resources for them to do what they needed to do. And they made some decisions on trying to figure out how to deal with the unsheltered folks. And they're still making those decisions, and the park made some decisions, and they're trying to get that right, my colleague there. What we've been trying to do with the state is to support those decisions, put more shelters online, figure out how to get more people affordable housing, and then use the COVID money, which can be used for temporary shelter for people who are at risk. And I would say just about everybody who is unsheltered and especially long-term homeless, are at risk. And we're working very hard with the county, cities, and the money that we have. The county's got an appropriation of over $200 million. I think the city got about $61 million, and the state got about, slightly over $2 billion to do all of this work, but it had to be related to COVID, and it had to be spent by December 31st. So we are all working with the governor, and we have a legislature, a Senate majority that really makes it hard. So the governor has been doing this work kind of unilaterally with our advice if the Senate majority won't go along with them. The Lake Street rebuild, We have a task force that is made up of two members of each caucus. For the Minnesota Senate, it's been Senator Torres Ray, who we know has, and some of you may be in her district because she is east of Cedar. I forgot where Midtown's lines stop. And then Senator Bobby Joe Champion on the north side. I'm in leadership, so I get to watch this and help guide this. But we thought that that was the right mix. Representative Noor, I don't know if Representative Hassan might be on that, as well as members of the Minority Caucus are working together to figure out what's the best way to manage and rebuild Lake Street, West Broadway, 44th University Avenue. In Minneapolis, one of our things is to assess the damage, figure out not only how much it's going to cost, but what insurance is going to do or not do. I am on the Commerce Committee, so we've had Commissioner Kelly to come in to work with insurance companies, with businesses who are telling us that they may not be getting all what they need. But once we figure that out, we are working on a couple of different bills to figure out how the state can provide support after the insurance and others come in to be able to support and rebuild Lake Street. And I will tell you, I have a particular kind of measure, and I've talked a lot to people about this, about rebuilding Lake Street in the complexion and the image that it was before and make it even better. So we're working with also nonprofit and philanthropy to try to not let speculators come in and buy it up and turn us into what you see sometimes just a little west of us in Uptown, but to make sure that the businesses get back there, that we can provide affordable housing on top of that. And when I say that, I mean at 50% and below and 30% of area median income. So it's truly affordable for people, not just the 60 and the luxury apartments and all that kind of stuff. So we're busy as a state working with our local partners, business owners, the Department of Economic Development, and the Commissioner of Commerce, which controls the insurance industry or regulates the insurance industry. So those are just some of the things that we're dealing with. The session, I'll just say this, we have a bonding bill that we are working on that is pretty much written, but the minority leader in the House, former Speaker Kirk Dowd, wants the governor to give up his peacetime emergency authority. And as you know, the bonding bill needs a bipartisan, I think they need about 6 or 7 votes in the House, 6 or 7 votes in the Senate on the other side of the aisle. So they do have this kind of veto power. So we have not been able to get it done in the last 2 special sessions because of Representative Dowd's opposition to the governor's peacetime emergency authority, which I talked to you is so necessary. So we're still working on that. We have to come back every 30 days while there's a peacetime emergency, so we have another crack. I am really proud to say that we have $30 million dedicated to equity, means people of color. It's in cash. And so I have personally supported and have authored about $15 million, maybe a little bit more, $17 million. A lot of that money is going to projects that are on Franklin Avenue, the NACDI Clinic, American Indian Center, and other projects there. We have a little bit of pre-planning money for the cultural corridor on 38th Street, and then there's some others throughout the state. So we're really hoping. And then there's the regular government, the GO bonds, which are the government-related issues. So we're hoping to get a bonding bill. We think it will be good for us. The Lake Street rebuild won't be in that because, once again, we still need to get the full total understanding of the city. And I know for those business owners and people living in the community, that's not fast enough. But the way that the bonds work, they have to kind of get out. And we're still trying to find the right way to fund that. And we're also still waiting on the city and others to give us the full totality of what is needed after insurance and others have been paid for. So I feel like I've been talking a lot because there's a lot going on. Homelessness issues, I will just, because I know that there's that concern in our community. I was just by the 26th and 14th encampment, which I just don't have any words for it. I'm not quite sure what the city is doing or why they're doing it. I know that I live on 40th and 3rd, and so I live a block away from Martin Luther King Park, and they tents have shown up there and all over, not too far from Powderhorn. So we are working closely with the county, the city, and the state to open up more homeless shelters for people that are there. And then as we have excuse me, this conversation about law enforcement, one of the things, excuse me, one of the things that we have to talk about is public safety, which I know you're really, really, really concerned about. And how do we have a law enforcement community that protects us, but doesn't brutalize us, but it is clear that there is a lot of lawlessness going around and we need some help in controlling that. So excuse me for the tickle in my throat. I probably have more, but I feel like I should stop there and take questions or get a sense if there's other things you'd like for me to talk about.
Well, I will let you know a few questions that are in the chat right now. One was, how open is Minnesota, and has there been consideration given to shut it down again? Is this, you touched on this a little bit, but is the state working with the city on East Lake Street? And Donna, if you need to unmute yourself to elaborate on any of these questions, let me know. And also, what happened to the $200 million bonding bill for affordable supportive housing in the special session?
Yeah, I think it's all self-explanatory, unless the senator has any questions of me. These three questions.
I'm reading them now. The encampment, so we are working really closely for... the COVID fund can be used for that. So there is a proposal that the city and county has for a shelter, one in our community, another one that the Native community, Indigenous community has. I don't have it right in front of me. I guess I can find it on my computer. And then one on the north side at the Old Willard school site for women. So they have rolled that out as a combination. There are also talks about expanding existing shelters. And those can be used on the COVID funds, and those would be immediate, and those funds are available now. So
I'm sorry. Thank you. That was that last question. It wasn't my question. It was on the bonding bill to build affordable, supportive housing.
I was told that
it didn't pass.
So the bonding bill, there was $100 million that was there. There was not a carve out for emergency shelters or affordable homeownership, but the housing infrastructure bond was $100 million that's in the bill, and it went through the...
For construction of supportive housing?
So the housing infrastructure bonds can be used for building supportive housing.
Okay, thank you.
The number was $100 million that got in the bill. There was also a tax bill, and because those bills have to start in the House per our Constitution, a tax bill and a bonding bill. And because of Minority Leader Doubt, former Speaker Doubt's opposition to the governor's peacetime emergency authority, the House vote, they couldn't pick up enough votes. They need 2/3, and the Republicans did not give the House the vote, so it failed.
Okay.
I just want to be really clear on what happened. So it never got to the Senate, and there wasn't enough votes for the Senate to pass it. I'm not the best at trying to keep up with chat. So you guys can just
Ask you the other two that I typed in there. So is Minnesota partially open? I mean, can people go to bars, for instance?
Yes, they are partially open. And what they're telling people is you have to wear, so bars are at 50% capacity. So they have to mark off 50%. They have to count how many people are there. And then you have to wear a mask coming in, but while you're eating or drinking, you can take your mask off, but otherwise you should have your mask on. And if you go to your local establishment, if they choose, they're supposed to mark off with social distancing and only 50% capacity. I will say in our kind of general area, bars are open, but they have been open sporadically because when someone comes down with the virus, then they have to close. You guys might know I frequent a bar too. And what we find is that they're asking you to sign in. So if indeed a staff or a person calls on contact tracing and says they've been exposed, they'll call you so that you can go and get tested and then take the appropriate action.
Well, can I lobby for us closing down? It looks really like we're spiking up here. I just want to lobby for closing down, for the governor to call a close down again, because I think it's dangerous. We're living dangerously. And then go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying that I think the governor is watching the numbers extremely closely. That's why the mask protocol is in effect. He won't hesitate to close us if he feels like he needs to, but he's fighting against, or I shouldn't say fighting, but the tension is against, you know, the industry. And you know, frankly, a lot of people in our community work in the industry, and I get two different versions of it. Some people are like, hey, I'm fine. And some people's like, I really want to go to work. And then we also have to deal with this issue of what's happening at Congress, because as of today, people are not going to get the boost in their unemployment. Now, they're working on that in Washington, but, you know, Senator McConnell and the Republican, I'll just keep saying the Republican caucus in Washington hasn't decided what bill they want to take up.
Okay, just yes or no so we can move on, but is the state working with the city on anything for rebuilding Lake Street? And I'll just mute myself out here.
Yeah, I tried to cover that, but I probably was moving too fast. We're working very closely with the city on rebuilding Lake Street and the other corridors. We have a task force, and we're working closely with the mayor, the city council, and CPED.
We have one other question from John. He says, with the current housing situation, more encampments are going to pop up and grow. What plans are there to make them safe for both campers and neighbors? Current policy in Minneapolis doesn't provide safety, and some are breeding grounds for COVID.
I wouldn't agree. I would agree more. We need to, there's a short-term solution, which is using the COVID funds to open up more shelters, which we can do under certain conditions. The median term is to provide more supportive housing and get a bigger bonding bill. As Donna indicated, in the long term, is that we must work to increase our affordable housing appropriation, and then work with the city to ensure that they are that the planning commission and the board and the planning committee, which I used to be a staffer for, is pushing for more affordable housing to be put up, not just market rate housing. So the state wants to do their part in providing it. There's a regulatory part of that, and then there is some COVID funds, and then other funds in the bonding bill to create more shelters and more supportive in housing that people can afford. Did I answer everything? All right.
I think so. I don't have any other questions here. Does anybody want elaboration on anything we've already discussed or have additional questions?
I just typed in a question there.
Hey, Tim, how are you, man?
Hi, Jeff.
Good to see you.
You too.
Tim's question here is, he heard you mention the $200 million, from state to Hennepin County for affordable housing. Is that right?
Well, I probably mixed those things up. There's $100 million in bonding for affordable housing. We would wanted it to be two, but the agreement is 100 if we keep the bonding bill. What I said is the county got over $200 million in COVID funds directly from the federal government to work on issues like shelter, hospital, PPE, the whole COVID gamut. And so they are working to budget and get that money out. The city got about $61 million in addition to that. And then the state has a chunk of money as well that came directly from the federal government in COVID funds. In addition to that, the state had $500 million, $500 million that they allocated for things like making sure that we have hospital bed capacity, making sure we have PPE, making sure that we have outreach to all communities. So there's been a lot of money spent, as well as the $100 million that the governor just put out for rental assistance that's going to roll out for people who need help. The lieutenant governor, though I didn't get to see the full press release, pulled out a litany of things that they're doing to try to help with homeless and other issues. So there is a lot of money, still not meeting the needs, but there is a lot of money that we have appropriated to try to deal with the aftermath and effects of COVID. And then in addition to that, in our community, these issues around affordable housing. I know that you guys are, and I am extremely concerned about safety, and I think that's one I didn't cover. And so we're trying to figure out through the process of the George Floyd murder and the city council's reworking, divestiture of, or defunding the police and reworking it, but then how do we keep the people safe who are there, get them out, and then the community safe, and then find the predators. And I've worked a long time in this community, guys, and then make sure that we deal with them in an appropriate way. So I think the city council is wrestling with that decision, and the state is primed to be able to help with that. But as you know, crime and safety issues, though the state can come in if asked for help, it really is a local control issue that sits at the city council and the mayor.
So you mentioned earlier that there is money coming to the city and to nonprofits organizations to expand shelters as a short-term thing, and that money is available now.
Yes.
So are you seeing any activity there that might begin to impact that situation? And as background, I have an apartment building across the street from Powderhorn Park, and when we had almost 600 tents in the park, and so many of the people there were chemically addicted, and so when you pack that many chemically addicted folks into one location, you get a lot of dealers, and when you get a lot of dealers, you get gangs and gangs and guns, and so it was just, you know, frightfully dangerous and scary, and it's like it's all wrapped up together, right? So it's like this really challenging thing, you know, and I don't have the answers, but just seeing it as, you know, a shelter, but then how do you do wraparound services, like Donna was saying, so that the folks who go there, you know, maybe have a chance of getting off what they're on, and the nearby blocks don't end up being, you know, the new ground zero for dealing in gunfights.
Tim, so I 100% agree with you. I was over there. I saw what was going on. Prior to me being in the legislature, I worked on homeless issues, and so kind of understand the particular intersection of vulnerability of people who are very vulnerable that are unsheltered or homelessness and those that prey upon them. I've pointed that out to the governor a lot. And also, you know, I kind of started my career in Powderhorn, so it's kind of a place that I, you know, kind of still call home and walk around. But the complexity was with the behavior of the police department and the George Floyd situation that people weren't always comfortable with calling the police or trusting that the police would come and do their job to protect them versus brutalize them. So this got really layered and complex, as you guys know. And mostly, you know, Tim, you've been and everybody knows Tim is the father of the Midtown Greenway. If hopefully I'm not offending you, but that's when I heard about it, and he stayed at it and created that. And even on the Greenway, we need to do much better. His vision is there, but there's some things that we would like to do better. And protecting people and allowing them to have that space is something that we want to do, and we've all invested in. So we have to really work together to kind of figure it out. And one of the things that I think that maybe is not being done is when listening to neighbors and constituents and people who live in the community, who want to live in the community, who's chosen to live in the community, and figure out ways in to work that out. And I don't envy the city council in trying to get the law enforcement right and the mayor and trying to change it so that we can get a police force we want. But I think the absence of that we saw didn't serve us very well in terms of vulnerable people, the people who live in the community, and the people who came in to prey upon the community, and that's what we got to keep working on.
Comment from John. I'm glad you recognize people are preying on the campers. The dealers have taken over the camp on 26th and 14th, and some of the campers are terrified.
Yeah, I have been talking to Jacob and other folks, excuse me, Mayor Fry, I guess I should call him, and other folks about that. My aide who's on the call in Diria, who doesn't live in our district and works with me in St. Paul, so I've been giving her a lot of tours in our district. And we drove by there just on Friday, and it was a really hard sight to see how close people were and some of the activity that it was brazen that we saw just from the car, if you will. So we got to do better. We have to figure out how to get our law enforcement or get a law enforcement entity to help with that, get the people the supportive and wraparound services that they need. But we got to sort that out between the people who are preying upon those folks. That is something I worked in social service. I work on, you know, I'm the ranking member of the Health and Human Service Committee. So I think about this all the time, and then worked for Hennepin County for many years as an eligibility worker before I got in the legislature. So I spent a lot of time kind of working there, and I think we can do much better. And I'm not quite totally sure why the 26th and 14th encampment has not been in, so there's been an intervention to get folks in a better place and then to weed out the criminal element that is there.
Yeah.
And so I will say this about the criminal element or those that are praying. You know, I believe, you know, my father has a treatment center called Turning Point in North Minneapolis. I believe in rehabilitation. My wife runs a treatment center, the Pride Center, the Pride Institute in Eden Prairie. I'm not saying that to brag on them. I'm saying that I believe and understand treatment and what it can do for people, but people have to want to make that step. But if you're preying upon people, we just can't let that happen. We can't let our community devolve there. And I'm extremely, extremely concerned, guys, about what is going on along the Lake Street Corridor that we've worked hard to clean up the Greenway, and especially on 26th and 14th.
Sure. And if I can jump in, sir, thank you for using the word brazen. My house abuts that 26th and 14th, so I see a lot that I don't like seeing. When you say brazen, this is God's honest truth. We have seen from our front porch cars pull up in broad daylight, somebody coming from the camp, taking a package of what appears to be heroin, using the hood of a car as a table while it's being divvied into smaller packages and brought into the camp. This is happening in broad daylight on a city street in Minneapolis. I've lived in the inner city all my life since I was back when I was a child. We still called them slums. I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah, you know, I wish I had a better answer, but you know, other than the way that the government is set up, you know, I'm not the one who, you know, I keep saying, you know, I told you guys I'm getting old, but I was city council 8 in the 9th ward. So I worked awfully hard on these issues. And I will tell you that when we came by my aide, and though I was driving and I looked at her and she had a look on her face. And when I talked to her as we drove kind of through, I wasn't going to stop, you know, just kind of slow road. And she saw a young woman who probably wasn't of age coming out of a tent and pulling down her shirt. And I don't mean to be vulgar here, with exposed breasts and a man coming from behind it. That's what she saw. So I'm not just saying that to be, and she's a pretty young woman. She's on the call. She could tell you. I mean, I'm not going to put her on the spot. But like when I say brazen, that's what I mean. And that was on Friday. And I was giving her a tour as we were starting to do some work on the campaign. And so and the look on Indira's face, though I didn't see it, though I've seen things like that, but the look on her face told me all I need to know. We got to do better. I'm all in and making things do better. But unfortunately, the way that, you know, the local government process works, I have a lot of influence and power as a state senator, but I don't have the, you know, direct supervision of the police or some of the public safety strategies that I think that we should be employing. And we've done this before over the years. And we had a lot better. We had restorative justice programs. We had treatment programs. The building that's going up in Children and Families on Bloomington and Lake, that was $10 million in bonding, and then Molly Greenman did another job of getting $10 million more. So we're putting services in the community, but we are going to have to take a tack that says if you don't want to use the services, you can't do the things that you're doing here, and then law enforcement does have to get involved. Once again, we don't want law enforcement coming in choking us out, but we do want them to protect us, and I think the city council really, really is having to work on that.
So we have a few more minutes if there's any other questions. Otherwise, to respect your time, we can let you go. Does anybody else have anything else they want to add, or do you have anything else, Senator, that you want to comment on?
Well, I just want to say thank you, guys. This is some of the toughest times. I'll just say this. My grandfather bought a house in 1918 at 2309 Fifth Avenue South. It's not there anymore. It's a vacant lot. And he lost a lot, all his equity when the freeway came through. But my mother and her family, you know, Mary Merrill. So I've been a South Minneapolitan and a Phillips person most of my life. I'm looking at Shirley there and others and Tim. And I shouldn't do that because I know all of you guys. So I'm committed deeply to this community and extremely, you know, want to be accessible and want to bring as many resources and policy that I can an influence that I have to our state reps and then all of our local government partners. So at the end of the day, I just want you guys to know that, like, this is a tough, tough time that we're living in, and I'm glad that you're hanging in there. I'm hanging in there with you, and I just want to just thank you for all the support over the years and then your work just being part of your neighborhood organization.
Senator Hayden? Before you leave, I started typing this out, but I don't know if I'd get it done by the time you left. But I have one more comment, and that is I was horrified by the tape of George Floyd's life being snuffed out with a knee on his neck. And I also have realized for years that we have a racist element in our police force. But one thing I want to comment on is that, with that said, we still need protection by our police. And what on the state level are you going to do to make sure that the baby isn't thrown out with the bathwater? Because we have experienced a wave of crime, especially in this neighborhood, ever since that incident. And I feel like the police have been so demoralized that, I mean, when we call them, they won't even go into the camp. You know, we have reported prostituted women that we think are being abused, and they won't go in. And so that's my question.
Yeah, you know, and thank you, Donna, and thank you for just hanging in there. It is tough, and this has been a problem for a long time. We just passed, I guess I didn't even talk about it, the law enforcement bill we passed at the legislature last week. Didn't go far enough, but it did start to regulate chokeholds and arbitration that the mayor and the chief needed to get rid of bad cops. The post board, which licensed them, has more civilian members and an oversight committee. We're doing more on mental health and autism, intellectual, what we call the invisible disabilities, to really set up a pathway so that local government entities or in charge of police forces can use that as a guide to redesign their police force. So we are in a very much of a catch-22 situation in which we need to get the wrong element out of the police force. I like Chief Rondo. He's a good friend. He grew up in these neighborhoods in South Minneapolis. I think he's the right guy for the job, or the right person. We need to continue to fight through and get a great police force that is going to protect us. We've even banned the warrior training and gone to a guardian training that protects us. But we are in a patch. We are going to have to be able to figure out how to get our police force back online. I am talking daily to the Hennepin County Sheriff. I think Sheriff Hutch is a great guy. The Director of Public Safety, John Harrington, who used to run St. Paul Police and the Metro Transit Police, really understands this. And I think that working together, hopefully we can still protect us as the city council works through their process in transforming the police department. I am deeply, deeply concerned about this as well. And almost every single day I'm having a conversation with someone, including the governor. And that's what the 12 years and the tenure and the deputy minority stuff is. It gives me access to those leaders. And this governor is aware of the concerns that he has in our neighborhood. He's seen Powderhorn. He saw the Sheridan. He understands this issue. And I will say, and Lieutenant Governor Flanagan really understands this as well. And she has really spearheading this issue on homelessness. So I'm sorry that I don't have an immediate fix for you, but it is at the absolute top of our mind to be able to protect us and be guardians, but also weed out the bad cops. And I know that you guys are taking it on the chin right now.
So could I just make a comment on that?
Yes, sir.
So I don't think weeding out the bad cops solves the problem. We're talking about a system here that doesn't work. The system has again and again and again been tried to be fixed, and it's never been fixed. It's the system that's the problem, not individual cops. And if we keep looking at it from the perspective of individual cops, we're not going to change anything. We have to look at the system, and the system needs to change. And we have to do that. We have to understand the system and understand what it is, where it came from, and what it's all about. And that's, to me, the real challenge. That's a lot more difficult, and that's a lot harder than just trying to get rid of some bad cops. Getting rid of bad cops isn't going to solve the problem. We need to change the system.
So, Peter, I agree with you. I guess I was speaking specifically to law enforcement reform that we did at the state level, that the first step at changing the system of how we look at law enforcement. But you're exactly right. When we're last in home ownership in communities of color, especially in the Black community, when we have an achievement gap that's lowest in the nation, when we have a wealth inequality gap between Black and white people and brown and white people, that all leads to the issues in every other one. So yes, that's, I spent almost my whole career on trying to figure those things out and change the system so we don't have to live in a place where people have to make those decisions. So I absolutely agree with you. I was just speaking directly to Donna about what we were doing right at this moment to try to alleviate some of the pressure that we have today and then to create system change at the state level to support the work that the city council is doing, but I agree with you wholly.
Thanks. Thank you so much, Senator. Thanks for being here. Thanks for all your great work.
Thank you guys. Really appreciate it. I'm gonna sign off unless there's any other questions, but thank you guys again.
Thank you for coming.
Appreciate it. Okay, good to see you.
Thank you so much. And I know that there were maybe, I don't know if Elena got her question answered, but we'll look forward to seeing what comes down the pipeline here to us in the neighborhood. Those of you who are here tonight, thank you, because we know that you encourage us with just coming together and showing other neighbors that we're not alone in what we're doing. And so your presence here tonight is really, really helpful. And as you can see, Sunny has recorded this and we'll make it available. And watch for continued updates. We have in a couple of weeks another board meeting. And then, Sunny, I'm drawing a blank. Do we have a topic for our August meeting?
We did not have anything scheduled for August. We're taking just sort of a month off to take care of some neighborhood issues. So we'll still be holding board meetings, but no community meeting in August. Yeah. So
That's right. That's why I couldn't think of what the topic was.
Yeah. I think we can adjourn the meeting unless anybody has any other announcements or things to add.
Just, thanks for getting the senator to come. That was great. Okay. Cool.
Thank you all for joining us. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.